I do have this deal with the dean. I meet my classes whenever I'm in town. It is a genuine pleasure to introduce two, since he used the word, old friends. I've known about Maynard and Shirley Dorough for a long time, because I'm from Iowa, too. And when they first went out to Korea nearly 40 years ago, 35 plus now, I think I have it down here, 37 years ago this coming Friday, they arrived in Korea on January 13th, 1958. So already as a high school student, I was reading about them in various church publications. And some 15 years ago, we had the pleasure at Concordia St. Paul of having them on campus for an entire academic year, and had the leaven which they bring as a gift from God to our student body and to us as a faculty. Maynard is a graduate of this institution, received his STM here in 1963 and an honorary doctorate in 1983. And in the late 50s, Maynard and Shirley went as one couple in a team of three couples to be church planters in Korea. I don't mean that in the sense that they went out to plant a congregation as we think of church planting in this country particularly. They went out to plant a church. And Maynard and Shirley, as the couple among the three who have stayed since that time, are indeed church planters. The Lutheran Church of Korea owes so much of its existence to their dedicated self-sacrificial giving of all the many gifts that God has given them. And, of course, they have another close association with us, since soon after they arrived, my dear colleague, Hwan Young, came to join them in his homeland from this institution and from work in North America. And since then, under the guidance of the Holy Spirit, the Lutheran Church in Korea has prospered not only to bring many people to know Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior, but also to be a leaven in the whole household of faith in Korea and in East Asia. Dr. Dorough's main work in Korea has been in theological education. He is president of Luther Seminary there. Teaches New Testament and homiletics, has served in a number of other areas, and particularly been advisor to young evangelists and vicars as they begin their new mission churches. Maynard and Shirley have four children and three grandchildren who are, I think, all in the United States now. And so they like to get back here from time to time, too. But it's a delight and a pleasure to be able to introduce to you as our first missionaries in residence. Shirley, would you stand, Shirley, here? Going to be the featured at the lunch hour that will follow immediately upon the convocation in Wartburg. We're delighted to have you with us, and may I now present to you Dr. Maynard Dorough.
Thank you very much, Dr. Culp, friend Bob. We have an expression in Korean about, an introduction is overdone. It's like being given an airplane ride, which has its dangers, you know. Be up so high and you can make a sudden fall. But thank you for your interest in coming here today, students and faculty. And I'm honored also that some of my revered fathers in the faith are also listening in some way, I trust. The other night, we had one of the dorm devotions in this room. And when we got, the second one was over in isolation, where we had some 30 students, and they asked me how many had showed up here. I suspect that was for the quad dorms. And they asked how many students had been here for the devotion. And I said, well, we had more presidents than students. But one thing we have learned in Korea is not always to count, but sometimes to weigh. And so the other night we weighed the students and came up very well in devotion. We have a long-standing and meaningful Korea Connection, Korea Concordia Connection. Dr. Copa's already talked of Dr. Won Young-ji, your president. Dr. Johnson and Mrs. Johnson just visited us last year. A year ago this fall. Dr. Wayne Smith and Dean Hempelman had visited us prior to that, and Dr. Barth prior to that. Dr. Fremder, whom maybe current students may not remember, advanced students will surely, spent a full semester with us as a visiting professor on our campus, and deepened our understandings and led us into new things in worship and understanding of church music. We have had since the mid-80s a program called Cross-Cultural Study, a program in Korea, for which we have invited students from Concordia Seminary here and from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne to spend a semester on our campus to get a view of another culture, to learn something about cross-cultural communication without having learned the language, and to have an experience of the church there. And that's been, it was quite successful for a number of years. The last two or three years, we haven't had candidates. Our most recent candidate, one of the outstanding ones, is Paul Wentz, who sits right here. Stand up, will you, Paul? You may sit down again. But no, any students who are interested in this program, and this comes about each year in the spring semester, please talk to Paul. He can give you insights into it. He will stimulate your interest. Be careful. He may have you committed within 5 or 10 minutes to applying for that program. One of our cross-cultural study students is coming back to Korea as a missionary this spring. Tom Engler, who is just now completing his STM degree here, happens to be gone right now to Colorado for a month's special preparation seminar program for missionary training. It helped, perhaps, to bring him back to Korea that he married a Korean girl, our church president's secretary. But they are a perfect match, I think, for us in Korea, and we're very delighted that Tom and Young Shin will be joining us this spring, together with their three boys. Of course, the particular connection is Dr. Won Young-ji. And so much of what I have to say today about the church there and about what we have done there has to do with what Dr. Ji did. I know that he will not want his name mentioned repeatedly. So there may be some euphemisms. I may refer to the author of the book called The History of Lutheranism, A Personal Account. I may speak of the Korean part of the team. And we all know, and he can be comfortable. But we must go on. All three of our full-time faculty at our Luther Seminary have been here for an STM. One of them, now Professor Ohm, is here beginning work on his doctorate. In case they haven't recognized you, Professor Ohm, why don't you stand also? Pastor Kim Chun-an, right next to him, a pastor of the Lutheran Church in Korea, just completing his STM degree. Kim Hyo-jong, is he here? Yes. Graduated from the college part of the division of our Luther Seminary, and is just now completing his MDiv here. So they go on and on. But I want to go back once to Lou Brighton. I know that Lou is on sabbatical, and he's keeping his nose to his Revelation project. So I'm not sure if he's here this morning. But this is a story that just has to be told. He served with the military in Korea in 1946 to 1948. And his experience there turned him to his ministry, his course of ministry, and to study here. And as it happened then, he became a classmate on the campus here with Dr. Wan Yongji, and knew each other then as schoolmates, as classmates here on the campus. When the author of this book, The History of Lutheranism, A Personal Account, when this book came out and Dr. Brighton read the book, he realized that he and Dr. G came from Korea to the United States on the same ship in March of 1948. Whether they saw each other on the ship, I suppose neither one of them knows. But Dr. Brighton returning from his service tour there, Dr. G, the author of the book, on his maiden, on his first trip to the United States, beginning his study tour here on the same ship together. And now Dr. Brighton will be completing the circle by visiting us in Korea this spring and lecturing for our students at the end of April and early in May. It's a beautiful Korea connection. And one additional word of thanks to the seminary, to the vision of people like Dr. Barth and continuing with Dr. Johnson and others here, that Dr. G has spent the spring term in Korea with us for the last 10 years. Not all of you may be aware of that. He teaches summer school here, fall and winter quarters, and then a full semester in the spring in Korea. He does a few things on the side in addition, as you may know. Korea is where I am from and a place with which I identify. Just a very brief lesson in geography. I don't know if you can all see this, but the green is Korea. This is China, what we used to call Manchuria. The line dividing what they call, commonly called the Demilitarized Zone between South Korea and North. Off to the east, Japan. You people who are precise geographers will recognize that Japan looks a bit small. Yes, that's the way Koreans look at Japan. You remember that it was a 38th parallel that divided North and South Korea at the end of World War II. Russia took over the North from the colonial Japanese power. The South was occupied by the United States. And that 38th parallel is more or less where St. Louis is, I think. Maybe a little north or south. I forgot which. But Korea has been called sometimes a pendant hanging on the breast of China. And it's also been called a dagger pointed at the heart of Japan. Both very interesting and artistic expressions. We'll get back to some of the meaning of that after a minute. Some more imaginative people have seen Korea looking like a rabbit sitting on its tail. Sitting upright on its tail, you see the long ears, perhaps rabbit-toeing its nose at China and puffing its tail at Japan. It also touches on Russia, just a few kilometers. But all of this indicates something of the geopolitical significance of Korea. And the recent downing of a helicopter in North Korea is a kind of symbol of Korea's geopolitical significance. You remember also the nuclear standoff of last spring and summer, President Carter's dramatic trip to North Korea that pretty kind of actually did resolve the basic matters and is leading toward what we think will become an increasing rapprochement between South Korea and the North. This has been the most divided, the most firm line in the between the communist and the free world, so to speak, in all this history. And now North Korea, of course, remains the lone standout in the communist world, unless you also count Cuba. Well, actually, the first title for my address today was something like the geo-missiological significance of Korea, the potential contribution of the Lutheran Church in Korea to mission in Asia. And I still think it's a good title. Dr. G liked it. On second thought, it was more academic than I wanted to be today. And so I'm speaking about the Lutheran challenge, Korea's strategic position for mission in Asia. A very brief history of Korea after having done this brief geography lesson. Korea has a long history, as you would know, as does China. They date their beginning from 2,333 years B.C. Not all of that is carefully recorded, but they do have a well-recorded history from several hundred years B.C. Early flowering of culture, already 3rd and 4th centuries, and reaching heights under Buddhist influence in the later 7th, 8th, 9th centuries. Later developments in science that are not always recognized in the West. They developed a form of movable type already in the 13th century. Mr. Gutenberg, step aside. They developed a form of ironclad ship already in the 16th century, and not often footnoted in our history books about the Merrimack and the Monitor. But coming up very quickly to the history that you will remember, some of us do, beginning with this century, or the end of the 20th, when the Yi Dynasty, a Confucian-dominated dynasty, crumbled. Japan, thinking not of Korea then as a dagger, but as a stepping stone for influence on the continent, moved in and took control formally in 1910 by actually occupying military control of Korea. There had been, over the centuries, tension, of course, between China and Japan. For many centuries, Korea was sometimes like a little brother, or perhaps a little bit of a servant of mainland China, but China had never occupied, never taken control militarily or of Korea. You know something then of the more recent history. At the end of World War II, as I mentioned, then North Korea came into the communist sphere and was cut off, completely cut off. Most of us are better acquainted with Germany, where we knew there was telephone and contacts and letters and visits back and forth. None of that in Korea. That is a very high and firm line between the two. And so Korea, North Korea, has been the most, perhaps the most isolated of all communist countries. And that bespeaks then the difficulties of opening up then after two generations of people under this ideological communism. South Korea, in the meantime, has developed. It has become a developing industrial nation, now at about $7,000 per person GNP. If you know our U.S., that's about 20, but 7,000 in Asian or East Asian, Southeast Asian terms is quite strong. So Korea, South Korea, something of a growing power in Asia, and the potential for a united Korea in the future says more. Something for which the Koreans are and have been praying all this time, and interesting that a committed American former, committed Christian former president should have had such a role in making a strong step forward in the eventually what appears to be an opening of the relations between North and South Korea. But I want to talk about the Church of Korea. And when I speak of the Church of Korea, I'm talking about, first of all, the entire Church of Korea. There's a sense in which that's also my church, our church. The church was in Korea before we Lutherans arrived with the gospel on our lips, and we're very grateful for that. The Roman Catholics, having begun there 210 years ago, but during a time when Korea was keeping out everything foreign, didn't want their culture, their religion, their pet ways of life disturbed, and kept everybody out, even burned coastlines bare so that ships passing by would think there was nothing there. The Catholics were severely persecuted at that time. And they say that after 100 years of work, and by the 1890s, when Korea opened up to the West, there were perhaps some 12,000 Roman Catholics. But Korea opened then to the West in the 1880s. The Presbyterians and the Methodists wasted no time, and they stepped off the ship together, the pioneer Presbyterian and Methodist missionaries, on Easter Day 1885. You've heard about my church, first of all. We arrived in Korea, and we were a small Lutheran band, and looking at the church around us, and that's our community. These are the, when I was baptized, I was baptized into Christ Church, and nothing was said about being a Lutheran. So I'm a Christian first, and a Lutheran second. And this came home very early to us. We would go out shopping, and we were learning Korean. And a Christian shopkeeper, hearing Korean from a foreigner, would guess, this must be a missionary. Oh, are you a missionary? Yes. Oh, you must be a Christian. Yes. 반갑습니다. So glad to meet a Christian. At that time, perhaps the population was 5% Christian. And to meet another Christian was to find a brother or a sister in the faith. So there are many ways in which we identify with the church from the beginning. You know something of the phenomenon of the Korean church. In all of Asia, outstanding. 25 to 30% of the population is Christian, compared with most of Asia, where it ranges from 1 to perhaps 5%, apart from Catholic Philippines. Out of a population, then, of 44 million people in South Korea, 12 million Christians, a very substantial number. About half of them are Presbyterian. Amazing, isn't it? Presbyterians, the Koreans, Presbyterian Christians are often amazed to find out that there are more Lutherans in the United States than Presbyterians. Isn't the whole world like Korea? For a long time, the Methodists followed, but in recent years, the Roman Catholic Church has grown more faster than the Methodists, and so they are second. And then on down the line with the Evangelical Church, which came from the World Oriental Missionary Society, the whole range of, not the whole range, but quite a range of denominations down, I shouldn't say down, but the Lutheran Church in Korea is one of the smallest in terms of numbers of Christians. Some 24 congregations with a total of some 3,000 baptized members. Korea is known, I know, around the world, and especially in the U.S. and elsewhere, for these mega churches. The big full gospel church on Yoi Island in Seoul. Sometimes it's treated like Jerusalem if you want to get to the heart of Christianity and what makes things go to the full gospel church and find out what makes this thing become a church of 650,000 members in one congregation. It is quite a phenomenon. And probably the 5 or 6, maybe even more, largest Presbyterian churches in the world are in Korea. Same thing with the Methodist. 50,000 members, 30, 20, 5 is common. But not all are mega churches. Now, I just learned recently that 70% of all the churches in Korea have less than 100 members. So we are a country of small churches. Of course, many of these are quite new, newly established, and so they're small. Many of them are rural churches, which, with the trend of population moving from rural areas to city, the small churches cannot grow anymore in the rural areas. But why this spectacular growth of the church in Korea? We teachers sometimes, you know, we play loose, not play loose, we play games with facts. If the students do that in their papers, we turn them back. But we can do things with facts. But anyway, do something with this. In 1958, when the Lutherans arrived in Korea, the population, the proportion of the population of Korea that was Christian was about 5%. After 37 years of Lutheran presence in Korea, the percentage of Christians is 25 to 30%. But that would require a few footnotes, I think, to explain. People have written books and many essays on why the churches in Korea have grown as they have. Let me just set down three or four of the more commonly accepted, and not everybody would agree with it either. One, the innate religiosity of the Korean people. Maybe hard to demonstrate scientifically, I don't know. But as a trait that is thought to be something of the Korean character personality. But when you think that, take note, that the most dynamic form of traditional Buddhism in East Asia has been kept in Korea. Only in Korea has an entire society in East Asia become thoroughly Confucian. North Korea became perhaps the most ideological, a communist nation. That's religion too. So they take a religion, or religion takes them, but they make the most of it. Anyway, Korea is, in a sense, the most Christian nation in Asia. The second reason, despite the presence of major religions, there existed something of a vacuum, a religious vacuum in Korea. Buddhism claims perhaps something like a third of the population, people who identify themselves as Buddhists. Underlying religion, something of the primal religion would be animism, known as shamanism in Korea. And if this is not organized, people look to the shaman for assistance in troubled times. And it is relatively easy to move from that kind of primal religion into Christianity. So there are many people who have simply they've not converted from something, but have simply become Christian. Third, Christianity in the series of social crises in Korea. The crumbling of the Yi dynasty, a Confucian dynasty at the end of the last century, by this colonial power, Japan, which increasingly became a difficult and a time in which to live. Then the Korean War, then the communist takeover in the north, and more persecution difficulties. So people, through all this time, a sense of need, a sense of helplessness, of sometimes frustration, despair, and Christianity came with hope and with help. And certainly these kinds of factors contributed also to the growth of the church in Korea. Just by contrast, as you would know, in most of Asia, Christian missionaries followed Western colonial powers. So whatever onus came upon those Western powers, whether they were occupying or simply taking commercial advantage of these countries, that onus often shifted to the missionaries and to the church. In Korea's case, the colonial power was Oriental. It was Japanese. And the Christian missionaries were from the West. And the church came, stood in opposition with the people against the Japanese colonial power. Not least, then, the Methodists and Presbyterians came in and introducing modern medicine and modern education, the tools that became the developing factors for developing of Korea as a modern nation. Well, we see there a church, and many Christians in Korea would think more in terms of the kind of life, Christian lifestyle they have, of the dynamic worship life, a strong prayer life, strong leadership with vision, people who come with something like a nothing is impossible attitude, and then when you add in the Lord to that, you can come up with a mighty church. Just a brief excursus on this. A church that grew up out of many difficulties in the context of oppression and persecution, and this is through the history we know, this has been often important in the growth of the church. Now we have a country where people's economic standing is rising quickly. Huge churches with lots of money to spend and success. Just recently, some people and some theologians and others sponsored a seminar in Korea on the theology of suffering and the theology of success. There's a lot of concern about what will be happening in this church that knew suffering and became faith to the faith and faithful in that context, and now faces a different kind of temptation and difficulties. But they have become a missionary church, and I mean sending missionaries. I was surprised in doing some recent reading that this began very soon after the Korean War. But in recent times now, with the resources of both financial and personnel, they are sending missionaries out. There are some 80 sending missionary agencies in Korea, about a third of them denominational, the rest separate individually established mission agencies. They have sent out some 3,500 missionaries, including spouses, to some, I forgot, 100 and some countries, Asia, Africa, Latin America, and Europe. A lot of enthusiasm, some good training programs. My impression is that it's a little still at their beginning stages, not all so well planned or so well prepared for, but they learn as they go, and they are contributing and see themselves not always, I think, in entirely good theological sense, but as a chosen people, God's chosen people to help for the missionizing, for the evangelizing of Asia. And they believe it and act on it. Well, as I listen to myself, and as you listen to me, you detect that, you can be enthusiastic about the church in Korea. And it's not hard to be that. I've not talked much about the warts, the problems, the sometimes excesses in enthusiasm as this takes place in worship and prayer that in our sense seems excessive, the divisiveness of the church. There are some 60 Presbyterian churches in Korea, 5 or 6 larger ones and 50 some more smaller ones. The amoeba? Divide and grow. So, but I think you've caught something of the geomissiological significance of Korea. A nation that is growing powerfully, and a church also, with considerable human and financial resources for the mission task, dependent on the breast of China. The outlook for China now kind of adds another dimension, more luster, new luster to this pendant hanging on China, and this dagger pointed at Japan. Well, the dagger can look like a cross. And Korea, if it's a dagger, if it's difficult to thrust into Japan as it is, they will go beyond to the rest of Asia and beyond around the world. So now, what about the Lutheran challenge? It's bigger for a smaller church. Where is the LCK in the midst of this Korean church? The book has this statement: it is sometimes difficult to talk about Lutherans in Korea. And the author wasn't being apologetic about what the Lutherans had done in coming to Korea or in what they did there, but simply in people so often look to the bottom line. You know, 12 million Christians in Korea, of which about 3,000 are Lutherans. Difficult? No, I don't think so. Only in that sense, in terms of people's expectations or people's judgments, perhaps, on what those figures seem to say or not say. Our little Lutheran church in Korea shares many of the characteristics of the big Korean church. It has a dynamic worship life. Church services Sunday morning, Sunday evening, Wednesday evening, chapel, cottage meetings Friday night, prayer meetings every morning at 5. We are an additional confessional church, aggressively so, with its confession on the sleeve. As a witness, not something to keep in the books, and striving to maintain its Lutheran and confessional identity in this midst of this huge Calvinist ocean. But we, the Lutheran Church in Korea, has made contributions to Korea all out of proportion to its size. I had something here about the beginnings of Korea and the concept of indigenous that kicked us off and got us going and gave us some frustrations. But if there's some time in the question or somewhere else, we'll pick that up. We'll do that in Dr. G's, my appearance's class on the theology of missions somewhere. But we began cautiously and deliberately. This was 1958, 5 years after the end of the Korean War. 4 million people had fled from the north to the south, among them hundreds of thousands of Christians who knew they would not survive under communism. So, and then the pouring in of new denominations from the U.S., a lot of new finance with this. There was confusion of all kinds. We Lutherans did not want to contribute to the confusion, but to add and build on to what was there. So the natural thing was to begin with resources at hand, one of which was the author of the book, another which was the Lutheran Hour, which could begin immediately with broadcasting and helping in the task of proclaiming the gospel around the whole nation, at the same time helping people learn to know the name Lutheran. Many people had not heard of it, what this meant. It's not a strange sect coming in under the name Lutheran, followed up with all kinds of literature and magazine, literature through the mail. Interesting concept, but in those days when people were so poor, they'd hear this on the Lutheran Hour. Two or three people would get together enough money to put on a postage stamp to write in for the free booklets introducing Christianity. Small Catechism, of course, a very early translation, then the Augsburg Confession in later years, again under certain strong leadership. A set of Luther's works, 12 volumes, translated into Korean, introducing Luther to this burgeoning church and its many seminaries. And then now we have also the entire Book of Concord in the Korean language. Basic things, tools for our own education programs and are part of our contribution to the church in Korea. began cautiously and carefully in planting current churches, but by 1971 there were 5 Lutheran congregations, and they took the step, a little bit bold and audacious for 5 little congregations perhaps, to form a constituting, have a constituting convention and become a national church body, the Lutheran Church in Korea. It was the right step, looking back, and gave new impetus, began thinking more in terms of reaching out with Lutheran churches, formed a 10-year plan for starting new churches. Today, as I mentioned, we have 24 Lutheran congregations. 20 of them are self-supporting. They move, they're very proud and move toward, with their own energies, to become self-supporting. Not everything goes smoothly according to our plan. Over the last 3 years, we've lost 5 pastors. 2 of them died. One in his early 30s, another in his late 40s. 2 left the ministry for personal and family reasons. 1 emigrated to the States. 1/5 of our ordained pastors over a period of several years. Quite a difficult hole to fill, but this means that our recent seminary graduates have had to fill slots rather than, as most of them expect to do and are trained, to go out, upon graduation, go out and start a new mission congregation. Theological training in Korea. Again, the Korean part of our team was imaginative and creative and established what we call the Lutheran Theological Academy. Candidates for who responded to this the opportunity for ministry in the Lutheran Church in Korea got their basic work at Yonsei Christian University. This meant that they had to have passed an entrance examination to a first-class school. And then they were given a core course of some 50 hours under our direction for preparation for the ministry in the Lutheran Church. It was a providential and a move which had also, which is also a stroke of genius. Those people who went through the LTA, Lutheran Theological Academy, and as I said, they had to have met high standards. Those are now the men who are the faculty in our seminary. They are the main leaders of our church, and we're grateful for that kind of beginning. Today, our theology education goes under the name of Luther Seminary. Luther Seminary is both college and MDiv level program under one roof. A college of about 160 students, both men and women, open to people of all denominations. They must be baptized Christians. It is a college of theology. We come under government regulations, 40%, to the extent that 40% of the curriculum must be in liberal arts. For the rest of it, we are free to form a basic curriculum in theology and basic Bible courses. The college is the basic feeding core course for into the MDiv level program, which for our college graduates is 2 years. For those who come from a general college or university, it is 3 years. Men and women in college, about 25 to 30% women, about 20% Lutheran, the rest from all other denominations. So here is a pickup point on the Lutheran challenge for us facing the seminary and facing our church. We do not just have full accreditation. Under the government, it's a 3-step program of becoming licensed or fully accredited. We are at step 2, which says that we have full academic recognition. The bachelor level, the college level is recognized as being fully qualified for the students to go on to graduate school. We have not yet met all the technical requirements, which are, at this point, we need more facilities. Then, with another 330,000 square feet of building, we will be able to get fully licensed and then be able to give the Bachelor of Theology sheepskin. So that has become, under our current president, Kim, Vision 2000, as he calls it, and he has we've developed a great deal of enthusiasm throughout the church for this, gathering funds to meet, to build this building, that we might have full accreditation, that we become the kind of school that we must be if we're going to train the kind of leaders that we need, the numbers of leaders that we need, and to fulfill our role as a contributing, a strong contributing part of the church in Korea. Some concluding points. The first one had to do with indigenous, so we'll go by that one. Take it up in class. The Lutheran Church in Korea has, I think, been, they're certainly unique in the ways and the measure in which it has made an ecumenical contribution to the church in its, where it works. Contributions, as I've mentioned, through Lutheran Hour literature, but always seeing this not merely in terms of I shouldn't say merely, not only of reaching out to the unchurched, but it being part of our mission to help build up the church that is there. After all, they're doing it so well, reaching out to the unchurched. And the better they can do it, the better the theology with which they do it, the better and the stronger the church it will be in the coming centuries. Done this also through we introduced the Bethel Bible Series, the first comprehensive Bible study program that caught fire in Korea. Some 5,000 pastors of all denominations have gone through the Bethel Bible Series two-week seminar, and some, 400,000 lay people of all churches have gone through the two-year program. And partly because the little Lutheran church in Korea was a threat to nobody in this broad spectrum of Christian denominations, from what we would call liberal to conservative. The Lutheran Church often played a kind of catalyst or bridge role in some very important interchurch meetings and conferences. The final point is that the Lutheran Church, as we concerns Korea's strategic position for mission in Asia, the geo-missiological significance of Korea. Our church in recent years, our LCMS, Lutheran Synod, has been responding to exciting things in Europe and in Russia, and the growth of the church in Africa is exciting. And you must say yes to all of this. But I think it is true, as much of the world is seeming to say and think, that the future, or at least a great part of the future of the world as we know it, is in Asia. It seems farther away, I believe, than some of these other areas. It seems more difficult to understand, and I think it is. But we need to make the effort both to bridge the distance and the understanding. So the handwriting on the wall, as I see it, is there space here for it or not? Goes something like this. The future lies in Asia. Korea, with its alluring, as an alluring pendant and as a sharp dagger, is destined to play an increasingly important part in Asia, certainly as a nation, and certainly as a church and a mission. So also the Korean church, with its dynamism, its spirit, its human financial resources, must be looked at seriously. So also our Lutheran church in Korea, that mighty small church, and what's the comma, or without the comma? A mighty small church. A mighty small church. With vision and verve. The key to the Lutheran Church in Korea, as that church is recognizing, is the full accreditation for Luther Seminary, high priority goal for our church there, and we hope that our counterparts in the Lutheran world community around the world, and especially our dear friends here in the United States, will also recognize that as a high priority. So, that handwriting on the wall is not so clear to everybody. Maybe hard to decipher. Is it written partly in Korean, or worse, in my own barely legible Korean script? But I believe it is there. So thank you for the opportunity to draw your attention to it and to share these things with you. You're very gracious listeners. I hope I left a couple minutes for questions.
There are a couple minutes for questions, and we would invite you all, or as many of you as can, to join us in Wartburg, either by going through the line and coming over, bringing your sack lunch, and the conversation can continue.
Good question. Overs and covers. Lutheran hour radio waves do go across the line, although the North Koreans do as much as they can to block all radio broadcast from the South. Just recently, our Lutheran Church in Korea has formed a study and planning body for future mission in North Korea and in China, where there are some 2 million Koreans living. We're looking into further possibilities of bringing Koreans from China or from Russia or Kazakhstan to participate, say, in our Bethel Bible Study seminars, or even spending a semester or a year at our Luther Seminary as some beginning opening wedges into those Korean communities in these other places. This would be a kind of beginning mission that we within our the scope of our resources. It's a good question, and it's part of that challenge. There are more than 40 fully accredited theological seminaries of other denominations, and a few years ago there were more theological students in Korea than in all of Asia. I'm not sure if that's still true today, but there are the large seminaries have 1,500, 2,000, 2,500 students, the large Presbyterian seminaries, and they have the same pattern as you, accepting Bachelor of Arts graduates and a three-year program, or they have the two tracks, that one plus the one that we have. In other words, Bachelor of Theology and then a two-year BTH. But Korea has high educational standards. It is high priority for the entire nation, and it has to be for us also. I can't imagine a Luther seminary in Korea or anywhere in the world, which is not striving for the top in excellence.
I think perhaps we should move toward the dining hall. I just wanted to mention another connection that's important for me that illustrates precisely that ecumenical contribution that also we have helped make here. Bong Rin-ro was a friend as I was a student here some years ago, and Bong Rin-ro is a Presbyterian who, what is he doing now? He was for a while secretary of a theological association for all of East Asia, right?
He was the secretary for the Asia Theological Association, which is an accrediting association. Mm-hmm. And just last year, our Luther Seminary became accredited by the ATA. Mm-hmm. Now, this is not recognized by the Korean government, but it does it has good standing for our students who may study abroad. Dr. Rowe is now Executive Director for the World Evangelical Fellowship. His base is Korea.
Again, we're so very grateful to Shirley and Maynard for being with us to help the Institute for Mission Studies inaugurate a Missionaries in Residence program and simply to bring the presence of Christ to us through their example and inspiration and their words. In a gentle way, they exemplify the very best of what it means to live out the Christian life and witness in this world. And we're grateful to God also that they can be here and to them for taking this week with us. Thank you all for coming. Please do come to Wartburg with us. And if you can, join us in classes. I think it's been fairly well advertised this afternoon at 12:40 or whenever Maynard gets there in 202 in Winnikens. We'll talk a little bit about theology of creation in the Korean context tomorrow at 10:15 in 102 and Friday in Winnikens 203 at 12:40 also. Thank you.